Book 4. Chapter I. After Jovian's death, Valentinian is proclaimed emperor, and takes his brother Phalens as colleague in the empire. Valentinian holds the Orthodox faith, but Phalens is an Arian. The emperor Jovian having died, as we have said, at Dardistana, in his own consulate and that of Varronian his son on the 17th of February, the army leaving Galatia arrived at Nicaea in Bithynia in 7 days' march, and they unanimously proclaimed Valentinian emperor. On the 25th of February, in the same consulate, he was Apponian by race, a native of the city of Cybalis, and being entrusted with a military command, had displayed great skill in tactics. He was moreover endowed with such greatness of mind, that he always appeared superior to any degree of honor he might have attained. As soon as they had created him emperor, he proceeded forthwith to Constantinople, and 30 days after his own possession of the imperial dignity, he made his brother Valens his colleague in the empire. They both professed Christianity, but did not hold the same Christian creed, for Valentinian respected the Nicene Creed, but Valens was prepossessed in favor of the Arian opinions. And this prejudice was caused by his having been baptized by Eudoxius, bishop of Constantinople. Each of them was zealous for the views of his own party, but when they had attained sovereign power, they manifested very different dispositions. For previously in the reign of Julian, when Valentinian was a military tribune, and Valens held a command in the emperor's guards, they both proved their zeal for the faith, for being constrained to sacrifice, they chose rather to give up their military rank than to do so and renounce Christianity. 1 Julian, however, knowing the necessity of the men to the state, retained them in their respective places, as did also Jovian, his successor in the empire. Later on, being invested with imperial authority, they were in accord in the management of public affairs, but as regards Christianity, as I have said, they behaved themselves very differently, for Valentinian, while he favored those who agreed with him in sentiment, offered no violence to the Arians, but Valens, in his anxiety to promote the Arian cause, grievously disturbed those who differed from them, as the course of our history will show. Now at that time Liberius presided over the Roman Church, and at Alexandrian Athanasius was bishop of the Homusians, while Lucius had been constituted George's successor by the Arians. At Antioch Uzoas was at the head of the Arians, but the Homusians were divided into two parties, of one of which Paulinus was chief, and Militius of the other. Cyril was again constituted over the church at Jerusalem. The churches at Constantinople were under the government of Eudoxius, who openly taught the dogmas of Arianism, but the Homusians had but one small edifice in the city wherein to hold their assemblies. Those of the Macedonian heresy who had dissented from the Acacians at Seleucia, then retained their churches in every city. Such was the state of ecclesiastical affairs at that time. 2. Chapter 2, Valentinian goes into the west, Valens remains at Constantinople, and grants the request of the Macedonians to hold a synod, but persecutes the adherents of the Homusian. Of the emperors 1. Valentinian, speedily went to the western parts of the empire, for the exigencies of affairs required his presence thither. Meanwhile Valens, residing at Constantinople, was addressed by most of the prelates of the Macedonian heresy, requesting that another synod might be convened for the correction of the creed. The emperor, supposing they agreed in sentiment with Eudoxius and Acacius, gave them permission to do so. They therefore made preparations for assembling in the city of Lampsacus. But Valens proceeded with the utmost dispatch toward Antioch in Syria, fearing lest the Persians should violate the treaty into which they had entered for 30 years in the reign of Jovian, and invade the Roman territories. They however remained quiet, and Valens employed this season of external tranquility to prosecute a war of extermination against all who acknowledged the Homusian. Paulinus their bishop, because of his eminent piety, he left unmolested. Militius he punished with exile, and all the rest, as many as refused to communicate with Uzoas, he drove out from the churches in Antioch, and subjected to various losses and punishments. It is even affirmed that he caused many to be drowned in the river Ontes, which flows by that city. Chapter 3, While Valens persecutes the Orthodox Christians in the East, a usurper arises at Constantinople named Procopius, and at the same time an earthquake and inundation take place and injure several cities. While Valens was thus occupied in Syria, there arose a usurper at Constantinople named Procopius, who, having collected a large body of troops in a very short time, meditated an expedition against the emperor. This intelligence created extreme solicitude in the emperor's mind and checked for a while the persecution he had commenced against all who dared to differ from him in opinion. And while the commotions of a civil war were painfully anticipated, an earthquake occurred which did much damage to many cities. The sea also changed its accustomed boundaries, and overflowed to such an extent in some places, that vessels might sail where roads had previously existed, and it retired so much from other places, that the ground became dry. These events happened in the first consulate of the two emperors. 1. Chapter 4, The Macedonians hold a synod at Lampsacus. During a period of both secular and ecclesiastical agitation, and after confirming the Antiochian Creed, and anathematizing that promulgated at Ariminum, they again ratify the deposition of Acacius and Eudoxius. While these events were taking place, there could be no peace either in the church or in the state. Now those who had been empowered by the emperor to hold a council assembled at Lampsacus in the consulate just mentioned. This was 7 years after the Council of Seleucia. There, after confirming the Antiochian Creed, to which they had subscribed at Seleucia, one they anathematized that which had been set forth at Ariminum II by their former associates in opinion. They moreover again condemned the party of Acacius and Eudoxius, and declared their deposition to have been just. 3. The civil war which was then impending prevented Eudoxius, bishop of Constantinople, from either gainsaying or revenging these determinations. Wherefore Eleusius, bishop of Cyzicus, and his adherents became for a little while the stronger party, inasmuch as they supported the views of Macedonius, which although before but obscurely known, acquired great publicity through the synod at Lampsacus. This synod, I think, was the cause of the increase of the Macedonians in the Hellespont, for Lampsacus is situated in one of the narrow bays of the Hellespont. Such was the issue of this council. Chapter 5, Engagement between Valens and _ Procopius near Nicolia in Phrygia, after which the usurper is betrayed by his chief officers, and with them put to death. Under the consulate one of Gratian and Dagilaiphus in the following year, the war was begun. For as soon as the usurper Procopius, leaving Constantinople, began his march at the head of his army toward the emperor, Valens hastened from Antioch, and came to an engagement with him near a city of Phrygia, called Nicolia. In the first encounter he was defeated, but soon after he took Procopius alive, through the treachery of Agilo and Gomarius, two of his generals, whom he subjected to the most extraordinary punishments. 2. The traitors he caused to be executed by being sawn asunder, disregarding the oaths he had sworn to them. 2 trees standing near each other being forcibly bowed down, one of the usurper's legs was fastened to each of them, after which the trees being suddenly permitted to recover their erect position, by their rise rent the tyrant into two parts, and thus torn apart the usurper perished. Chapter 6. After the death of Procopius, Valens constrains those who composed the synod, and all Christians, to profess Arianism. The emperor, having thus successfully terminated the conflict, immediately began to move against the Christians, with the design of converting every sect to Arianism. But he was especially incensed against those who had composed the synod at Lampsacus, not only on account of their deposition of the Arian bishops, but because they had anathematized the creed published at Ariminum. On arriving therefore at Nicomedia in Bithynia, he sent for Eleusius, bishop of Cyzicus, who, as I have before said, one closely adhered to the opinions of Macedonius. Therefore the emperor, having convened a council of Arian bishops, commanded Eleusius to give his assent to their faith. At first he refused to do so, but on being terrified with threats of banishment and confiscation of property, he was intimidated and assented to the Arian belief. Immediately afterwards, however, he repented, and returning to Cyzicus, bitterly complained in presence of all the people, asserting that his quiescence was due to violence, and not of his own choice. He then exhorted them to seek another bishop for themselves, since he had been compelled to renounce his own opinion. But the inhabitants of Cyzicus loved and venerated him too much to think of losing him. They therefore refused to be subject to any other bishop, nor would they permit him to retire from his own church, and thus continuing under his oversight, they remained steadfast in their own heresy. Chapter 7, Eunomius supersedes Eleusius the Macedonian in the See of Cyzicus, his origin and imitation of Aetius, whose amanuensis he had been. The bishop of Constantinople, being informed of these circumstances, constituted Eunomius bishop of Cyzicus, inasmuch as he was a person able by his eloquence to win over the minds of the multitude to his own way of thinking. On his arrival at Cyzicus, an imperial edict was published in which it was ordered that Eleusius should be ejected, and Eunomius installed in his place. This being carried into effect, those who attached themselves to Eleusius, after erecting a sacred edifice without the city, assembled there with him. But enough has been said of Eleusius. Let us now give some account of Eunomius. He had been secretary to Aetius, surnamed Athias, of whom we have before spoken, one and had learned from conversing with him, to imitate his sophistical mode of reasoning, being little aware that while exercising himself in framing fallacious arguments, and in the use of certain insignificant terms, he was really deceiving himself. This habit, however, inflated him with pride, and he fell into blasphemous heresies, and so became an advocate of the dogmas of Arius, and in various ways an adversary to the doctrines of truth. And as he had but a very slender knowledge of the letter of Scripture, he was wholly unable to enter into the spirit of it. Yet he abounded in words, and was accustomed to repeat the same thoughts in different terms, without ever arriving at a clear explanation of what he had proposed to himself. Of this, his seven books on the Apostles' Epistle to the Romans, on which he bestowed a quantity of vain labor, is a remarkable proof, for although he has employed an immense number of words in the attempt to expound it, he has by no means succeeded in apprehending the scope and object of that epistle. All other works of his extant are of a similar character, in which he that would take the trouble to examine them, would find a great scarcity of sense, amidst a profusion of verbiage. This Eunomius Eudoxius promoted to the See of Cyzicus, who being come thither, astonished his auditors by the extraordinary display of his dialectic art, and thus a great sensation was produced at Cyzicus. At length the people, unable to endure any longer the empty and assumptions parade of his language, drove him out of their city. He therefore withdrew to Constantinople, and taking up his abode with Eudoxius, was regarded as a titular three-bishop. But lest we should seem to have said these things for the sake of detraction, let us hear what Eunomius himself has the hardihood to utter in his sophistical discourses concerning the deity himself, for he uses the following language: God knows no more of his own substance than we do, nor is this more known to him, and less to us. But whatever we know about the divine substance, that precisely is known to God, and on the other hand, whatever he knows, the same also you will find without any difference in us. This and many other similar tedious and absurd fallacies Eunomius was accustomed to draw up in utter insensibility to his own folly. On what account he afterwards separated from the Arians, we shall state in its proper place. 4. Chapter 8, of the Oracle found inscribed in a stone, when the walls of Chalcedon were demolished by order of the Emperor Valens. His order was issued by the emperor that the walls of Chalcedon, a city opposite to Byzantium, should be demolished, for he had sworn to do this, after he should have conquered the usurper, because the Chalcedonians had sided with the usurper, and had used insulting language toward Valens, one and shut their gates against him as he passed by their city. In consequence of the imperial decree, therefore, the walls were raised and the stones were conveyed to Constantinople to serve for the formation of the public baths which are called Constantiani. On one of these stones an oracle was found engraven, which had lain concealed for a long time, in which it was predicted that when the city should be supplied with abundance of water, then should the wall serve for a bath, and that innumerable hordes of barbarous nations having overrun the provinces of the Roman Empire, and done a great deal of mischief, should themselves at length be destroyed. We shall here insert this oracle for the gratification of the studious. 3. When nymphs their mystic dance with watery feet shall tread through proud Byzantium's stately street, when rage the city wall shall overthrow, whose stones to fence a bathing place shall go, then savage lands shall send forth myriad swarms, adorned with golden locks and burnished arms, that having Ister's silver streams o'erpassed, shall Scythian fields and Mysia's meadows waste. But when with conquest flushed they enter Thrace, fate shall assign them there a burial place. Such was the prophecy, and indeed it afterwards happened, that when Valens by building an aqueduct supplied Constantinople with abundance of water, the barbarous nations made various eruptions, as we shall hereafter see. But it happened that some explained the prediction otherwise, for when that aqueduct was completed, Cleitus the prefect of the city built a stately bath, to which the name of the plentiful water for was given, in that which is now called the Forum of Theodosius, on which account the people celebrated a festival with great rejoicings, whereby there was, say they, an accomplishment of those words of the oracle, their mystic dance with watery feet shall tread through proud Byzantium's stately street. But the completion of the prophecy took place afterwards. While the demolition was in progress, the Constantinopolitans besought the emperor to suspend the destruction of the walls, and the inhabitants of Nicomedia and Nicaea ascending from Bithynia to Constantinople, made the same request. But the emperor being exceedingly exasperated against the Chalcedonians, was with difficulty prevailed upon to listen to these petitions in their favor, but that he might perform his oath, he commanded that the walls should be pulled down, while at the same time the breaches should be repaired by being filled up with other small stones. Whence it is that in the present day one may see in certain parts of the wall very inferior materials laid upon prodigiously large stones, forming those unsightly patches which were made on that occasion. So much will be sufficient on the walls of Chalcedon. Chapter 9. Valens persecutes the Novatians, because they accepted the Orthodox faith. The emperor, however, did not cease his persecution of those who embraced the doctrine of the Homusian, but drove them away from Constantinople, and as the Novatians acknowledged the same faith, they also were subjected to similar treatment. He commanded that their churches should be shut up, also their bishop they sent into exile. His name was Agellius, a person that had presided over their churches from the time of Constantine, and had led an apostolic life, for he always walked barefoot, and used but one coat, observing the injunction of the gospel. One but the emperor's displeasure against this sect was moderated by the efforts of a pious and eloquent man named Marcin, who had formerly been in military service at the imperial palace, but was at that time a presbyter in the Novatian church, and taught Anastasia and Carosa, the emperor's daughters, grammar, from the former of whom the public baths yet standing, which Valens erected at Constantinople, were named. 2. From respect for this person therefore the Novatian churches which had been for some time closed, were again opened. The Arians however would not suffer this people to remain undisturbed, for they disliked them on account of the sympathy and love the Novatians manifested toward the Homusians, with whom they agreed in sentiment. Such was the state of affairs at that time. We may here remark that the war against the usurper Procopius was terminated about the end of May, in the consulate 3 of Gratian and Dagaleiphus. Chapter 10, Birth of Valentinian the Younger. Soon after the conclusion of this war, and under the same consulate, one a son was born to Valentinian, the emperor in the western parts, to whom the same name as his father's was given. For Gratian had been born previously to his becoming emperor. Chapter 11, Hail of extraordinary size, and earthquakes in Bithynia and the Hellespont. On the 2d of June of the following year, in the consulate 1 of Lupicin and Jovian, there fell at Constantinople hail of such a size as would fill a Moor's hand. Many affirmed that this hail had fallen as a consequence of the divine displeasure, because of the emperor's having banished several persons engaged in the sacred ministry, those, in the next year. 3. When Valentinian and Valens were a second time consuls, there happened on the 11th of October, an earthquake in Bithynia which destroyed the city of Nicaea on the 11th day of October. This was about 12 years after Nicomedia had been visited by a similar catastrophe. Soon afterwards, the largest portion of Jumma in the Hellespont was reduced to ruins by another earthquake. Nevertheless, no impression was made on the mind of either Eudoxius the Arian bishop, or the emperor Valens, by these occurrences, for they did not desist from their relentless persecution of those who dissented from them in matters of faith. Meanwhile, these convulsions of the earth were regarded as typical of the disturbances which agitated the churches, for many of the clerical body were sent into exile, as we have stated. Basil and Gregory alone, by a special dispensation of divine providence, being on account of their eminent piety exempted from this punishment. The former of these individuals was bishop of Caesarea in Cappadocia, while Gregory presided over Nazianzus, for a little city in the vicinity of Caesarea. But we shall have occasion to mention both Basil and Gregory again in the course of our history. 5. Chapter 12. The Macedonians, pressed by the emperor's violence toward them, send a deputation to Liberius, bishop of Rome, and subscribe the Nicene Creed. When the maintainers of the Homoousian doctrine had been thus severely dealt with, and put to flight, the persecutors began afresh to harass the Macedonians, who, impelled by fear rather than violence, send deputations to one another from city to city, declaring the necessity of appealing to the emperor's brother, and also to Liberius, bishop of Rome, and that it was far better for them to embrace their faith than to communicate with the party of Eudoxius. They sent for this purpose Astathius, bishop of Sebastia, who had been several times deposed, Silvanus of Tarsus in Cilicia, and Theophilus of Castabella in the same province, charging them to dissent in nothing from Liberius concerning the faith, but to enter into communion with the Roman Church, and confirm the doctrine of the Homoousian. These persons therefore proceeded to old Rome, carrying with them the letters of those who had separated themselves from Acacius at Seleucia. To the emperor they could not have access, he being occupied in the Gauls with a war against the Sarmati, but they presented their letters to Liberius. He at first refused to admit them, saying they were of the Arian faction, and could not possibly be received into communion by the church, inasmuch as they had rejected the Nicene Creed. To this they replied that by change of sentiment they had acknowledged the truth, having long since renounced the Nemean One Creed, and avowed the Son to be in every way like the Father, moreover that they considered the terms like homoios and homoousios to have precisely the same import. When they had made this statement, Liberius demanded of them a written confession of their faith, and they accordingly presented him a document in which the substance of the Nicene Creed was inserted. I have not introduced here, because of their length, the letters from Smyrna, Asia, and from Pisidia, Isauria, Pamphylia, and Lycia, in all which places they had held synods. The written profession which the deputies sent with Astathius, delivered to Liberius, is as follows. To our Lord, brother, and fellow minister Libphius, Astathius, Theophilus, and Silvanus, salutations in the Lord. On account of the insane opinion of heretics, who cease not to introduce occasions of offence into the Catholic churches, we being desirous of checking their career, come forward to express our approbation of the doctrines recognized the Synod of Orthodox Bishops which has been convened at Lampsacus, Smyrna, and various other places, from which synod we being constituted a deputation, bring a letter to your benignity and to all the Italian and Western bishops, by which we declare that we hold and maintain the Catholic faith which was established in the Holy Council at Nicaea under the reign of Constantine of blessed memory, by 318 bishops, and his hitherto continued entire and unshaken, in which creed the term homoousios is holily and devoutly employed in opposition to the pernicious doctrine of Arius. We therefore, together with the aforesaid persons whom we represent, profess under our own hand, that we have held, do hold, and will maintain the same faith even unto the end. We condemn Arius, and his impious doctrine, with his disciples, and those who agree with his sentiments, as also the same heresy of Sabius, to the Patripassans, 3 the Marcionites, 4 the Photinians, 5 the Marcellians, 6 that of Paul of Samosata, 7 and those who countenance such tenets, in short all the heresies which are opposed to the aforesaid sacred creed, which was piously and in a Catholic spirit set forth by the Holy Fathers at Nicaea. But we especially anathematize that form of the creed which was recited at the Synod of Ariminum, 8 as altogether contrary to the before-mentioned creed of the Holy Synod of Nicaea, to which the bishops at Constantinople affixed their signatures, being deceived by artifice and perjury, by reason of its having been brought from Nice, 9 a town of Thrace. Our own creed, and that of those whose delegates we are, is this: apostrophe we believe in one God the Father Almighty, the maker of all things visible and invisible, and in one only begotten God, the Lord Jesus Christ, the Son of God, begotten of the Father, that is of the substance of the Father, God of God, light of light, very God of very God, begotten not made, of the same substance with the Father, through whom all things were made which are in heaven, and which are upon the earth, who for us men, and for our salvation, descended, became incarnate, and was made man, suffered, and rose again the third day, ascended into the heavens, and will come to judge the living and the dead. We believe also in the Holy Spirit. But the Catholic and Apostolic Church of God anathematizes those who assert that there was a time when he was not, and that he was not before he was begotten, and that he was made of things which are not, or those that say the Son of God is of another hypostasis or substance than the Father, or that he is mutable, or susceptible of change. Apostrophe I, Astathius, bishop of the city of Sebastia, with Theophilus and Silvanus, delegates of the Synod of Lampsacus, Smyrna, and other places, have voluntarily subscribed this confession of faith with our own hands. And if, after the publication of this creed, anyone shall presume to calumniate either us, or those who sent us, let him come with the letters of your holiness before such orthodox bishops as your sanctity shall approve of, and bring the matter to an issue with us before them, and if any charge shall be substantiated, let the guilty be punished. Liberius, having securely pledged the delegates by this document, received them into communion, and afterwards dismissed them with this letter. The letter of Liberius, Bishop of Rome, to the bishops of the Macedonians, to our beloved brethren and fellow ministers, Evtheus, Cyril, Hypericius, Uranius, Heron, Elpidius, Maximus, Eusebius, Eucarpius, Hortasius, Neon, Eumathius, Faustinus, Proclinus, Pacinicus, Arsenius, Severus, Didymian, Britannius, Callicrates, Dalmatius, Odysseus, Astosius, Ambrose, Gelonius, Pardlius, Macedonius, Paul, Marcellus, Heraclius, Alexander, Adolius, Marcin, Sthenelus, John, Macca, Charisius, Silvanus, Fortunus, Antony, Athos, Celsus, Euprenon, Milesius, Patricius, Severian, Eusebius, Eumolpius, Athanasius, Diophantus, Menodorus, Diocles, Chrysampolis, Neon, Eugenius, Astathius, Callicrates, Arsenius, Eugenius, Martyrius, Hieracius, Leontius, Philagrius, Lucius, and to all the Orthodox bishops in the East, Liberius Bishop of Italy, and the bishops throughout the West, salutations always in the Lord. Your letters, beloved brethren, resplendent with the light of faith, delivered to us by our highly esteemed brethren, the bishops Astathius, Silvanus, and Theophilus, brought to us the much longed for joy of peace and concord, and this chiefly because they have demonstrated and assured us that your opinion and sentiments are in perfect harmony with those both of our insignificance, and also with those of all the bishops in Italy and the western parts. We acknowledge this to be the Catholic and Apostolic faith, which until the time of the Synod at Nicaea had continued unadulterated and unshaken. This creed your legates have professed that they themselves hold, and to our great joy have obliterated every vestige and impression of an injurious suspicion, by attesting it not only in word, but also in writing. We have deemed it proper to subjoin to these letters a copy of this their declaration, lest we should leave any pretext to the heretics for entering into a fresh conspiracy, by which they might stir up the smouldering embers of their own malice, and according to their custom, rekindle the flames of discord. Moreover, our most esteemed brethren, Astartheus Silvanus, and Theophilus, have professed this also, both that they themselves, and also your love, have always held, and will maintain unto the last, the creed approved of at Nicaea by 318 Orthodox bishops, which contains the perfect truth, and both confutes and overthrows the whole swarm of heretics. For it was not of their own will, but by divine appointment, that so great a number of bishops was collected against the madness of Arius, as equaled that of those by whose assistance blessed Abraham through faith destroyed so many thousand of his enemies. 10. This faith being comprehended in the terms hypostasis and homousios, like a strong and impregnable fortress checks and repels all the assaults and vain machinations of Arian perverseness. Wherefore, when all the Western bishops were assembled at Ariminum, whither the craft of the Arians had drawn them, in order that either by deceptive persuasions, or to speak more truly, by the coercion of the secular power, they might erase, or indirectly revoke what had been introduced into the creed with so much prudence, their subtlety was not of the least avail. For almost all those who at Ariminum were either allured into error, or at that time deceived, have since taken a fight view of the matter, and after anathematizing the exposition of faith set forth by those who were convened at Ariminum, have subscribed the Catholic and Apostolic Creed which was promulgated at Nicaea. They have entered into communion with us, and regard the dogma of Arius and his disciples with increased aversion, and are even indignant against it. Of which fact, when the legates of your love saw the indubitable evidences, they annexed yourselves to their own subscription, anathematizing Arius, and what was transacted at Ariminum against the creed ratified at Nicaea, to which even you yourselves, beguiled by perjury, were induced to subscribe. Whence it appeared suitable to us to write to your love, and to accede to your just request, especially since we are assured by the profession of your legates that the Eastern bishops have recovered their senses, and now concur in opinion with the Orthodox of the West. We further give you to understand, lest ye should be ignorant of it, that the blasphemies of the Synod of Ariminum have been anathematized by those who seem to have been at that time deceived by fraud, and that all have acknowledged the Nicene Creed. It is fit therefore that it should be made generally known by you that such as have had their faith vitiated by violence or guile, may now emerge from heretical darkness into the divine light of Catholic liberty. Moreover, whosoever of them, after this council, shall not disgorge the poison of corrupt doctrine, by abjuring all the blasphemies of Arius, and anathematizing them, let them know that they are themselves, together with Arius and his disciples and the rest of the serpents, whether Sabians, Patripassans, or the followers of any other heresy, dissevered and excommunicated from the assemblies of the Church, which does not admit of illegitimate children. May God preserve you steadfast, beloved brethren. When the adherents of Astartheus had received this letter, they proceeded to Sicily, where they caused a synod of Sicilian bishops to be convened, and in their presence avowed the Homousian faith, and professed their adherence to the Nicene Creed. Then, having received from them also a letter to the same effect as the preceding, they returned to those who had sent them. They on their part, on the receipt of the letters of Liberius, sent delegates from city to city to the prominent supporters of the doctrine of the Homousian, exhorting them to assemble simultaneously at Tarsus in Cilicia, in order to confirm the Nicene Creed, and terminate all the contentions which had subsequently arisen. And indeed this would probably have been accomplished had not the Arian bishop, Eudoxius, who at that time possessed great influence with the emperor, thwarted their purpose. For on learning of the synod that had been summoned to meet at Tarsus, he became so exasperated that he redoubled his persecution against them, that the Macedonians, by sending legates to Liberius, were admitted to communion with him, and professed the Nicene Creed, is attested by Sabinus himself, in his collection of synodical transactions.